Good afternoon.
So today I want to talk about adapting the Cal EnviroScreen Cumulative Impact Model to investigate environmental burden, social vulnerability, and disease in the Houston metropolitan area. And I'm supposed to have this disclosure. I have no relationships with other entities. So in environmental justice, one of the issues that we have when we're researching it is that we have these mixed results. So some studies say, yes, this injustice does exist, and some studies don't. And so to address some of this, we're using cumulative impact models, where we're investigating multiple pollution sources within a community, in addition to looking at population characteristics. So today I want to talk to you about, can we adopt an existing model, instead of creating a new model for a new region, to investigate burden and vulnerability in relation to illness. And I want to have a discussion because this particular model uses vulnerability. And vulnerability is very common in the disaster emergency preparedness literature. But in health disparities, I'm wondering, should we be really looking at vulnerability or communities that are at a disadvantage? And then how I've incorporated medical records. So we actually have health outcomes. So how can we look at burden in relation to vulnerability slash disadvantage? And are we seeing higher negative health outcomes in these communities? And then I'm a big GIS person. Can we actually identify the clusters in the region so we can redirect resources to those areas? So the Cal EnviroScreen model, the final draft came out and it was approved in October 2014. And the reason why I really like this model is, one, it's at the census tract unit, which gives us a lot of variability when we're looking at a particular area. But this model actually is divided into two components. We have a pollution burden component, and there's subcomponents underneath. So there's this exposure element, for example, PM 2.5 or ozone, but they also take in consideration effects. And you'll see in this chart here, it's red. So I look at these more as the proximity to hazards that we see an awful lot in the literature. And they're not weighted as heavily because we're not quite sure of the exposure pathways with these variables, but we do know that they're important when we're looking at the community. And then their population characteristics includes things that we do see in vulnerability, for example, linguistic isolation, unemployment, poverty, and then less than a high school diploma education. But in this index, they also include age, so children and senior citizens, but interestingly, they put their health outcomes within the scoring system. So what happens, this is a relative ranking system where each census tract is analyzed for each of these variables, and then we create this aggregated score per census tract. And then each census tract then is related, compared to each other. So then we can find census tracts that have the highest burden and vulnerability score. So here's an example of some of the mapping techniques that they use in this tool. So what you see here on the red are the census tracts with the highest burden and vulnerability. And not surprising, we see this a lot in urban areas. So to give you a little bit of background, so my research is focusing on Houston metropolitan area. And Houston is a really great city. It's experiencing tremendous growth right now. So if you look at the slide in the upper left-hand corner, that's our skyline in the middle of nowhere, but that's our skyline. But if you look at the bottom left corner, there's a shipping channel located in the east portion of the city of Houston. It's the largest petrochemical refining corridor in the world. So if you look at that picture, it's almost all, I can't even explain it, it's just miles and miles and miles of these facilities emitting pollutants into the environment. But if you look really closely at the picture, you can see the downtown area in the upper left corner. The ship channel is only 5 miles away from downtown, but you can't really see it due to the constant haze that we have in the city. Another interesting problem with Houston is that they don't have a developed public transportation system, so their idea of public transportation is 5-lane highways in each direction and then building them on top of each other. So we have tremendous congestion. But what's really alarming in Texas is there's really lax zoning law. So if you look at the picture in the center, there is no zoning between residential and industrial sites. So you have schools, homes, and what you see here, parks, right next to manufacturing facilities. And these are occurring predominantly in low-income minority areas in the city of Houston. So I'm part of something called, and you can tell the environmental engineers created this name, because it's the Houston Aerosol Characterization and Health Experiment. So the acronym is HACHE. So I'm working with a team of environmental engineers, atmospheric scientists, population health, sociologists, bioinformatics, and then I'm the environmental health person, kind of brings everyone together. So how can we look at these cumulative impacts? And then what's really neat about this study is that we do have access to these medical records where we actually have health outcomes to look in relation to burden and vulnerability. So the data that we have is about 325, a little bit more, aggregated health records. And these are for adults above the age of 18 and older. And what's interesting is it's both inpatient and outpatient. So we're not looking at particularly an acute condition. For example, we see a lot of asthma studies that look at emergency room visits, nor are we targeting just one segment of the population, for example, when Medicaid or Medicare records are used, looking at environmental exposures. Our socio-demographic variables come from the census and the American Community Survey. And then we've gathered information from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality to work on the variables for the burden side. So I just want to give you some perspective. So Houston is a minority-majority city, which means there's not one predominant race in Houston. However, we're highly segregated. So if you look at this map, it's circular because that's how the road system is set up in Houston, and it's pie-shaped. So you can see in areas of like cream or gold, that's Hispanic communities, and in blue, it's predominantly Black communities, but the segregation occurs because that's where they develop the roadways to go outwards from like spokes. It's almost like a spider web. So they cut the expressways through these communities, highly, you know, isolated and within. And these are predominantly low-income communities as well. So I just want to give you this perspective as we start looking at burden and illness, and you're going to see this trend occurring as we look at the city. So I'm adapting this model. Right now I have ozone and PM2.5. We're working on the other variables. We're finding that sometimes getting the data takes a while, and then getting the data into a format where we can analyze is a time-consuming process. But what's really nice about cumulative impact models, you can keep working on a variable and then adding it to the model. So right now we're looking at exposure elements. We're working on the exposures from the risk assessment, the RSCI from TRI sites, but again, we're gonna keep adding to the model. And this is the vulnerability side. So again, we have the four socio-demographic variables and then age. I pulled the health outcome variables because I believe if we're looking at health disparities, we really want to see health outcomes as our dependent variable. You know, are these factors contributing to these negative health outcomes? So what I am proposing is, do we really want social vulnerability, but are we truly interested in disadvantage? And disadvantage has been well researched in sociological publications. You look at Sampson and Massey, and they talk about this disadvantage component as a contributor to negative health. And we also see this in the health disparity literature. So I wanted to do a comparison. You know, is vulnerability the same as disadvantage? Are they different? Should we be looking at both depending on the circumstance? So if you look at environmental justice literature, sometimes we don't really define what the at-risk population is. Like, why are we examining this particular population beyond poverty and race? So these are the health outcomes. I'm sorry, I didn't realize the mouse was in the screen. So for today, we're gonna look at heart disease, heart attack, respiratory disease, and asthma. So through medical records, we can determine what the diagnosis was for each patient. So these are the four main areas. So disadvantage and vulnerability. So in this particular graphic, I'm using software called GEODA. And this particular analysis, geostatistical analysis that's conducted here is called a local indications of spatial association. So basically, these are clusters of significance. So there's other tests that are run to come up with these maps. Because sometimes when we start looking at geography, there's this natural correlation. So we have to be really careful when we create our maps to make sure the clusters are significant and not just because, you know, there's this tendency of randomness for them to be clustered together. So these are significant maps. So on the left, we are showing the disadvantage index. And again, this is female-headed household, poverty, education, and employment. And on the right is where we actually include the age as well. And it does appear to be similar, but they're not. There's a 25 census tract difference between disadvantage on the left and vulnerability on the right. So vulnerability actually captures more of the population. And to think about it this way, sometimes, you know, you can be a senior citizen and you can be vulnerable during a disaster, but you're not necessarily low income. So when I'm doing disparity research, I think the target population is more of a disadvantaged population instead of a vulnerability population. But I think that's something us in environmental health need to investigate more so we truly understand the difference between the two. So let's start comparing some of the illness rates. So on the left is a map with the burden disadvantage score. So I calculated all the scores. You multiply the pollution burden times the disadvantage score, you come up with this mean score. So in the red, we call those high clusters. I have areas, a census tract that has a high score of burden disadvantage surrounded by other census tracts that also have a high burden disadvantage score. The blue is something we call low. So these are areas with low disadvantage, so they're more privileged areas, and there's very low burden. But if you can see here, can you see how in the circular pattern here, it's predominantly the clusters of high burden and disadvantage are in the center of Houston. They're predominantly on the right side of the city. But there's some areas that are minority and low income that are not showing this high burden and disadvantage score. So on the right, now I'm looking at census tracts that have a high burden census tract surrounded by census tracts that also have high heart disease. So think of this as high rates of heart disease in relation to high burden and disadvantage. So again, we see how these clusterings we're seeing in disadvantaged burden communities, we do see high rates of heart disease that are significant. What's interesting in the pink on this map is something called high-low. And what that means is we're seeing high heart disease in these areas, but very low burden and disadvantage. So it's just interesting how we're seeing the distribution of illness within the census tract. So according to this map, we're seeing elevated respiratory disease. So maybe when we're looking at health disparities in the communities, maybe it is environmental stressors that are contributing to the negative health outcomes. And so now let's take a look. Now I'm going to show you respiratory disease and asthma. Again, we're seeing the same patterns. In disadvantaged burden communities, we're seeing high respiratory disease, and we're also seeing high rates of asthma. But then again, if you look at the respiratory disease toward the south, we do see higher respiratory disease, even though it's low burden. But if you look at asthma, it truly is mostly concentrated in the inner city on the east side of the city. So in conclusion, with my talk today, with cumulative impact models, there's all these different models that we're using across the country, and we're not standardizing the variables that we're using to define what we think is pollution burden. So I think there should be a movement as we are, you know, investigating different areas. Can we find a model where we're using the same variables so we can compare the different areas? Is there a commonality, for example, between Chicago and Houston when I'm looking at pollution burden? Is there a commonality when I'm looking at disadvantage? Because if you look at the cumulative impact studies, we're not defining the population with the same variables, and we're not defining burden with the same variables. But I do think the California tool has a proven approach which can be adopted, and I think it's working well for us in the Houston area. As for medical records, I think this health outcome portion is really important to truly understand when we're looking at environmental justice. What is the outcome we're truly interested in? Yes, we know these communities are burdened, but is it because the health disparities and having negative health outcomes, can we use this information to better understand health disparities in our communities? And then lastly, how are we going to define this population at risk? Because I know in the environmental health literature, we've been using vulnerability for a long time, and I know when I work with sociologists, they use this disadvantage index instead. So maybe we can have an interdisciplinary dialogue on which one we should be using. Should we be using both depending on what our research question is, or in particular situations, should we be identifying our populations with one, you know, one index versus the other?
Great. We have a couple minutes for questions if folks want to ask Dr. Osiki some questions, or you can wait till the end.
California does make their data very accessible. We're finding that the data is available in Texas. They just put it in PDF format where it's not easily downloadable, and it's nestled away in these really interesting reports. So we're finding that it's taking a lot more investigation and digging. So right now we're able to do the TRI-RCI index. We know we can do traffic density. So we see most of the variables. Unfortunately, it's just a time-consuming process for us to get it in a format so we can use it within this model.
Can I add something? And we've looked at that model, and pesticide data is really a huge problem. That's something that California has great data on, CalEnviroScreen, and most other states don't have.
So in this situation, like for Houston, because it's an urban area, pesticides and drinking water drop off because there's just not that exposure element. So I think that's another thing when we're comparing rural versus urban areas, which variables, but yeah, California has really great information.
Because the California model is this relative measure, which you're showing, but they're doing it relative to a whole state, which is huge and large and it's a target. How do you think that that compares to, say, doing it just in this metropolitan area? Because it is just a relative measure, so you're,
Right. So, and that's what cumulative. So, if you look at cumulative impact models, you know, California has census tracts for the whole state, and there's impact models, for example, by county level. So, you're right. There's this geographic unit issue, and then do we have enough? So, in this model here, we have 1,100 census tracts. So, I do think, you know,
Houston
metropolitan area. So, it's about an 8-county area. So, I think that's a robust enough amount for us for comparison. And again, these models are just to show possible relationships so we can investigate further, especially in the inner cities. That's a good question.
So we can have more questions at the end, too. Thanks so much, Dr. Osiki.